Beaming out across the galaxy, this is where conspiracy on the wild side meets the perspective of a lifetime. This is the Free Zone with your host, Freeman.
Hello and welcome to the Free Zone. Well, membership is up, folks. That is awesome. Thank you so much. And people are starting to realize the importance of lectures like Aliens from Hell. I mean, since it's been pulled off of YouTube, banned worldwide, folks, sales of the DVD are up. That's awesome. And you guys really want this information. I promise you it's going to set the pace for your future of understanding what is actually going on planet Earth. I mean, we are seeking to understand our world and often accepting the most bizarre scenarios and overlooking the dull academic areas. What's in between all of this? Where do we find this knowledge and knowledge that we can sit upon? Well, I have the great privilege of talking to thinkers from all over the world, and they bring me information and understanding and bring it to you from everywhere that we can think about these situations. Well, I consider myself very lucky to be able to accept this wonder without fear, because I feel that's what we're after here, trying to understand our world, reinvigorate our wonder and our lust for life by looking into the bizarre and most amazing things that can be happening on planet Earth, and then trying to find the level to understand where these things balance out into the reality. Now, I consider myself lucky because I get to talk to all of these people, and you guys lucky because you get to hear them all. But one person that's even luckier than I is none other than Jimmy Church. Now, Jimmy Church is a radio and television host for the Game Changer Network. He hosts his own podcast called Fade to Black. I have been a guest a number of times. Jimmy is also guest host for none other than Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. Oh, yeah, that's right. And he co-stars on the History Channel's Hangar One, the UFO Files, and even is involved in a time travel conspiracy show called Time Beings. He is set, ready to go to contact in the desert, and we're going to talk about that. You can get everything from Fade to Black at jimmychurchradio.com. Now, Jimmy and I have been great friends for a long time, but this is the first time I've put him in the hot seat here on the Free Zone. So please welcome to the stage the invincible Jimmy Church.
My man, Freeman. You bring up a great point there, Freeman. You've been on my show probably a half a dozen times, and after all these years, I'm finally here with you, and it's great. Thank you so much.
Hey, it is a wonderful joy for me, I'll tell you that, Jimmy. I am so excited because, you know, here we are. We are like these funnels for all this information. You get to talk to thousands of people, and then you are this computer that's accessing all the different data, and, you know, let's put our BS meter out there and start to figure things out a little bit.
Well, you bring up a great point, and I talk about this a lot, and you and I have literally interviewed thousands of people. And when I grew up, I'm going to say this really quick. When I grew up, I had two really cool parents. My mom was just out of her mind. Ouija boards, Edgar Cayce, Eric Von Daniken, and, you know, in the early 70s, late 60s. And she constantly reinforced with me that the world was never what it seems. And I always looked at the world a little bit differently. My dad was a musician, still is. He was in the Army band. He was a band leader for the Army band. So never fired a weapon, I don't think, ever. You know, he played his instruments and was a band leader. So I had a very unique view of the world. And now, doing what I do and what you do, we have interviewed so many researchers around the world and authors on this grand conspiracy thing. Well, what it has done for me and for you too, of course, is it reinforces our worldview. And I've always questioned everything, but the more that I interview and I collect information and listen to everybody, the world is not what it seems. And we are, let me put it to you this way. When I say we, I'm speaking about you and myself. We are no longer considered the crazy conspiracy guys.
Yeah, right.
Right? We are now the normal guys because we went through in 2016 this crazy thing called fake news. And the world bought it. They bought it, right? They listened to the narrative, and they didn't know what was true and what wasn't. As 2016 rolled by us into 2017, with all of this fake news, it was telling people that they were believing what they were told. And when you get 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, a dozen different versions of a story, some of it true, some of it not, some of it combined, and these emotions worldwide were swaying back and forth, Freeman, people didn't know anymore. And suddenly those stories about conspiracies and George Orwell and the Ministry of Truth and you're being fed and you don't know what the real, and they were, wait a minute, things aren't what they seem, are they? And so us, the alt, right? Everybody called us the alt view. Suddenly we were closer to the truth than what all of that mainstream media and even the fake media that was out there was laying out to everybody. It was an amazing time for us to go through. I and you, well, the two of us certainly, have been talking about the fake narrative out there to be aware. Question everything. And it allowed us, right, to step back and go, well, we've been vindicated. We're right.
Absolutely. So,
and it was just a wonderful, it was a wonderful thing to go through in the end, but it was a horrific thing for the world to go through. It was a definite change in when you think about the high and mighty out there with Fox and CNN and ABC, NBC, CBS and everybody at BBC, pick an RT, pick a network where suddenly their very dedicated viewers are now questioning what they are being told from these networks, and the networks were turning to us, for relevance. And it's just really crazy that we went through it. So yes, is there a big conspiracy? Absolutely. Is the world what we have been told? No, it is certainly not. And you can pick a subject. It doesn't really matter. You can pick a subject. You can connect the dots between Giza and the pyramids and the JFK assassination. They're connected. As crazy as that sounds, they are. Why? We have been lied to about our own history, our own past, and we are lied to today about events that occur. And that's the thing. Why are they doing it? There's a control mechanism that is in place to make sure that we, A, have our eye off of the prize, and B, it fits their own agenda. And for most of it, it comes down to money, certainly. The profits and corporations and banking systems and states and governments need to constantly push forward for them. And is it an alien ET, narrative that is controlling them? Is it the Illuminati? Is it the cabal? Is it the deep state? Is it corporate? Is it the military industrial complex? Is it Hollywood? Or is it all of the above? I can assure you that no matter what it is, it's not what we think that it is because of what they have been telling us. And we live in very interesting times.
Without a doubt. And I hope that we'll get into some dark disclosure in these 2 hours. I mean, recently, not that long ago, the Royal Society came together, gathered together all the best minds to answer the question, well, what are we going to do when we do meet E.T.? And they announced extraterrestrial ambassadors like Linda Rothschild for NASA and Maslan Othman for the UN Office of Outer Space Affairs. They had the Blue brain project in there for mind transfers, technologies, talking about transhumanism. We had Jesuit priests coming in there like Benjamin Funes, and he's talking about how he would baptize any ET no matter how many tentacles they had. This is at the height of our scientific royal society, and yet the world still just kind of goes on like everything's normal and A-okay.
Yeah, and what was most fascinating about all of that is that the Vatican, biggest corporation in the world, knows a lot. What they are telling us, it's 0%, right? Absolutely a false narrative coming out of the Vatican. But we just came off of this past Saturday was May 13th, the 100th anniversary of Fatima. Right. If we look at the 100th anniversary, now the Pope flew out. Right. He did his little thing. And we have two new saints as of Saturday. Jacinta and Francisco, two of the children that were witnesses to Fatima. But Fatima itself, if we just look at the facts of Fatima. May 13th was the first of the six visions. 5 months later, on October 13th, by the way, which is, you know, Friday the 13th, the infamous Knights Templar downfall day. On October 13th, 60 to 70,000 people gathered in Fatima to witness a UFO event. Now, what ultimately happened and how it was described in the media from the New York Times to everybody, there was 70,000 people out there, and they all described the same thing. The sun started changing colors, started spinning, then zigzagged down to Earth, and then back up again. Now, we need to stop for a second and digest what they are trying to describe. Obviously, the sun did not come down to Earth. We know that that didn't happen. But it was some type of supernatural event. And it did occur, and it was photographed. This is a modern 20th century event. This is not 2,000 years ago. This happened in 1917. And the Vatican has recognized this as a supernatural event, that this actually did occur. And we know that it did. Now, what was the reality behind it? The Vatican today talking about baptizing ET, right? What is it? They have their own observatories. They know that the universe is vast, and they know that we are not alone out here. They know this is fact. And for them to come forward like this over the last 6 months, seriously talking about ET and religion involving that, what is it that they know? They are trying to get out in front of this story, because when the disclosure that we're talking about here happens, and the world accepts that contact has been made, the world, right, accepts this, the Vatican's got to stay out in front of this story. So this drip, drip of disclosure coming out of the Vatican, talking about a universal religion and baptism of ET, which sounds crazy at first, but they've got to warm up the Catholics around the world, which is, you know, it's the largest religion. And they've got Christianity, and they've got to let everybody know that everything is going to be okay. They don't want this huge collapse and anarchy in the streets and the Vatican and world governments to all fall apart, to stay in front of this. And is it connected with the United Nations? Absolutely. What do they know? They know everything. And it goes to governments and Washington, D.C. and the Vatican. They know what's going on. And when we look at something like Fatima, that really happened, right? Now, to turn Fatima into a religious experience instead of a true E.T., you know, close encounter, is the only way that they can admit that this act, they can't call 70,000 people crazy that were there to witness this. So they have to put the spin on it, and they've done that. But certainly there is a, there is an agenda out there with ET ambassadors, which is a crazy thought, right? And each month, along with the Vatican and Washington, D.C., and the United Nations and different countries around the world, is NASA. NASA's in the middle of all of this every single month announcing fast radio burst. Right. Some kind of contact. A new exoplanet has been discovered. The possibility of life in the seas of Europa. Right. Enceladus. And that's in our own solar system. They are acclimating all of us for something that is about to break. And it's going to break big when it does.
Yeah, absolutely. I was trying to think of the name of that system where they found a bunch of Goldilocks planets. It had such an intriguing title.
Well, which one?
Right.
Right. Which one? Well, we have the closest star to us. It'll come to me in just a second. I don't, you know, I run without show notes.
I hear you.
The audience. Yeah. The closest star to us, which is 4.5 light years away, there's a planet, right? It's the closest star to us, the closest, has an exoplanet that is, it looks like, with all the data that we have collected, a rocky planet with an atmosphere just like Earth. Right in the Goldilocks zone, same age, and so forth. Now, what is interesting about that, it's also the last planet that we have discovered, right? In that we have discovered between 1 and 2,000 exoplanets. But the one that is closest to us is the last one that we have discovered. I don't know how how we can find so many exoplanets out there at these vast distances. But the one that's closest to us, just discovered it was about 2 months ago. But these announcements are coming daily. The other, I'll tell you something funny about. Oh, it was about 3 years ago when Bill Clinton was on Jimmy Kimmel. And I went back and watched that famous video clip. But there was something telling there. Everybody was studying Bill's movements and trying to figure out what was really going on and what if he was telling the truth. But there was a sentence that he said that was interesting. He said, "We have discovered 20 exoplanets." That's what came out of his mouth, 20. And in the last 3 years, since Bill was on 3 years, 4 years ago or whenever it was. But since then, now the numbers are in the thousands, right? I think the last number officially that was out was 1,600 exoplanets, 1,600. The number is much higher than that, but this is, these are the official confirmations. The numbers are going up every single day because of the software that is working to discover the light changes. But think about that for a second. We've gone from 20 with Bill on Kimmel to today. This number is extraordinarily large. And the amount of galaxies. Do you remember, not to stay on this ET thing for too long here, we're going to discuss disclosure, but when before Hubble was launched, and this is what the audience needs to absorb here, all of the photographs and imagery that we made of space had stars in it. Stars, beautiful stars. You know, we sit here on Earth and we look up and we see stars. We see the Milky Way. We launch Hubble, and everything was enlarged. And what we thought were stars turned out to be galaxies, right? And they blew these images up, and each one was another swirling version of the Milky Way. And it stopped everybody dead in their tracks, and it really tripped me out. to look at these images and realize that all these little bright spots that we have been seeing are actually galaxies and not stars. Yes, some are stars. A vast majority are stars. But what I'm saying is when Hubble did these deep space shots, and you look at it at first and you're seeing stars, and as they blew it up, they turned out to be galaxies. And each one of these galaxies has 100 million stars, a half a billion stars. Think about that for a second. It is much more massive than we could have ever imagined. And this is all recent knowledge that we have accumulated in the last 15 years, compared to the last 2,000 years. If you go back to Galileo and what he was observing to what we now know as truth today, it is so vast. There is so much life out there. And if we here, and I'll leave you on this point, there's two questions that man has always had since the beginning of time. You're looking up to the stars and you're wondering if we are alone. That's the first question. The other one is, what happens when we die? Right? Those are the two questions. So if we have been looking to the stars, like we wonder, and we're sending out probes to other planets, and we're going to Saturn and Jupiter and Venus and Mars and the moon, and that's all that we, our technology is pushing to go, and then ET is doing the very exact same thing. They are looking for us. That's what they are doing, because we are doing the same thing. And our technology since 1960 has been focused on getting rockets out into space and probes and satellites and trying to get out of our own solar system and discover what is out there. But if somebody out there is a million years more advanced than us, and in the big cosmic timetable, that's a very short period of time. Right? A million years advanced, 10,000 years advanced, a billion years advanced. They have the technology to discover things all over this universe. And do they know that we are here? They're here all the time. Of course. We're a bright, blue, beautiful planet teeming with life. They know we are here, just like we know about the exoplanets that we are discovering with our little primitive minds. Think about that for a second. Are we alone? Absolutely not. Do they know that we're here? They're here every single day.
Man, I had the great pleasure of hanging out at the Gilliland Ranch and putting on those night vision goggles and watching what seemed to be an extraterrestrial highway going on above us.
Right.
Crazy.
Yeah, we're going to be up at the Gilliland Ranch July 4th. I'll be speaking up there up at East SETI. And that is a true bucket list for us. That July 4th weekend, we had a bunch of requests to go to different conferences around the country. And we're going to East SETI. And I'll be speaking up there for a couple of days. But the things that go on at night, with night vision. This is what the trippy thing is about that? You see it at night with night vision. Okay. And you obviously find out very quickly. That's an epiphany. That's a life changing thing for anybody to go and look up at the sky and see what's really going on up there. But it's also going on during the day, right? It's going
right
24/7 all over this planet. Things that you have no idea. Once you see it for the first time and you know that that is not our technology, that is something up there cruising around, 24/7, that is a life-changing event. Life-changing. The first time it happened to me, it brought me to my knees. I literally bent over, put my hands on my knees, and said, "I need a Vicodin and a cold shot of vodka." I couldn't wrap. I actually think that's what came out of my mouth. Actually, right. That's what I said. But I could not wrap my head around. Let me tell you what happened. I'm going to tell the audience. We're a contact in the desert last year. We'll be a contact in the desert here in a couple of days. Last year. And we went out. It was the George Norrie birthday party, and on Saturday night. And so we were doing that in the big dome there. And about halfway through the birthday party, Rita, my wife, gets a text on her phone. UFOs, UFOs, you got to get out of here. And we're like, what? So we blow the party, right? We blow out. And we take off, and people are running up the street. Joshua Tree, where Contact in the Desert is held. It's a 400-acre compound in the middle of the desert. It's big. So there's roads, and, you know, it's an infrastructure. It's 400 acres. And people are running up this road. And I'm with the security guy, and I turned to him, and I said, where is this spot? It's called Orion's Lookout. He goes, man, go down to the road here, make a left. And so we're going. We're following the lemmings to the sea, right? Everybody is panicking. And we get out there, and it's Melinda Leslie, and she's doing a night vision thing. And I go up to Melinda, and I'm there for 10 seconds. 10 seconds. And I'm standing there, and everybody is freaking out. And I look straight up. I tilt my head back, and I just look up into the Milky Way, which is right, you know, stretching across the sky in the middle of the desert, lit up beautifully. And I just look at this star, the brightest thing that I can see. It's just a star, you know, like at 12 noon, you know, straight up. And this star, and this is exactly what happened. This star moves from the left to the right, and it moves about, if you put your arms up, you know, whatever a foot would be, right? It moves from left to right and then goes poof, and disappears. I was like, what was that? And I'm tripping. I've never seen anything like this in my life. I've never seen a star move or a planet. You know, obviously, what I think is a star or a planet. We all look up into the sky all the time. We see stars. We know what we're looking at. That's what I was looking at. Anyway, so it moves from left to right and goes. And somebody hands me some night vision goggles at that moment. And everybody's laughing at me. I'm on a PA system. Melinda's got a microphone, and you know, so I'm speaking to the crowd. And I get the night vision. I look back up at 12 o'clock, the same position. And then I see the thing light back up in night vision and now go from right to left back to where it was and go poof, just like that. And I bent over and I went, wait a minute here. And my head was spinning. I couldn't believe it. And people are laughing. And then just a few seconds later, off to my left, we're on a cliff, by the way. It's a big cliff, a cliff. It's a cliff called Orion's Lookout. And there's probably 200 or 300 people there. And also with me was, or there was, CBC, Canadian Broadcast Corporation, is there filming a documentary. And they have like 3 or 4 cameras and a film crew and the whole thing, which I found out about that later. It's in the dark. You know, I can't, you know, it's anyway. So right. Off to my left, about a mile and a half away, is the ridge of these mountains. And I look, somebody points, and I look and I see this, what appears to be a green chrome Christmas ornament. Again, it's a couple of miles away, but it's obviously big because I can see it. I can see its shape and I can see it shiny. So what is it if it's that far away? How big? You know, I don't know, a couple of hundred feet in diameter, I'm guessing. But this is what happens. This thing starts taking off and it's moving away from us. It's off to my left, and I got the night vision, and I look at it, and it's this massive chrome ball, and it's hauling balls. It is going out, straight in front of us, across the desert floor, above the mountaintops, and it's just right. Just, but no noise, no flames, no sparks, no lights, no nothing. It's just this green chrome ball, and it takes about 5 minutes, and it takes off, and it's going straight at ground level. You know, probably 500 feet off the ground, 1,000 feet, I'm guessing, in front of these mountains. And then it turns up and starts taking off up into the sky. And I'm following it. Again, the CBC is there. The microphone is in, you know, and I'm talking to the crowd. And we're all watching it. And as I'm looking at it in the night vision, the crowd all has these high-powered military lasers, right? And they're all pointing at this thing. And I can see it in the binoculars, in the night vision. Every time the laser goes over this ball, it sparkled, which says it's solid. It's a solid object, right? So anyway, it goes up for about 5 minutes. And then now it's a little dot of light. I don't know how many miles away it is, but it's up out of the atmosphere. It's way high. And now it's a pinprick of light. But I can see it in the night vision. And it's slowing down, slowing down, slowing down, slowing down. And then it stops. And I pull the night vision away and I'm looking at it. It's next to another star. But it looks like two little stars now. Pinpricks of light. And I'm looking at it again in the night vision. It sits there for about 10 seconds and then turns left, pew, and shoots off into space. I'm just like, wait a minute, people. It's everybody pump the brakes on this. We need to really stop and think about what we just saw. That I cannot explain that. Freeman, it was the nuttiest, craziest thing. Now, This is where the story gets, for me, I don't care what people say. I don't care. We had, it's Contact in the Desert. There was plenty of video and film and images and witnesses. You know, probably a couple of thousand people ended up seeing this. So I wasn't alone. And that week I was on Coast to Coast. And I'm talking to Lisa, the producer over at Coast. And she goes, so what are you going to do this Friday? You know, who's your guest? And I said, my guest is going to be me. She said, what? I said, it's going to be me. And I told her what happened. She goes, go for it. I just didn't care, Freeman. I decided, you know, Coast, each night on Coast, I don't know how many people I'm speaking to, but, you know, it's 1 million or 2 million people. And I don't care. Over at Coast or on my show, I take phone calls every single night, and I have people that are witnessing things like this and describe things like this. But now I'm the crazy guy, right? I'm the crazy caller dude.
Right.
And I just didn't care. I did not care. The world needed to hear about this. It was an amazing experience. But nobody else in the media wants to take the chance, right? They don't want to be the crazy guy. Right. They don't want to be labeled. I don't care. I really don't. The UFO community needs somebody like me to just stand up for them. Because they're out there seeing these things, but nobody wants to listen. And that's it. I went on Coast and I described it just like I just told you. And it was something that just tells me that either, with an experience like that, that either this is ET visiting us, this is ET technology that we possess that we're using that we don't know about and the government is not telling us about, some kind of crazy energy device. You know, maybe it's backwards techno. I don't know. It could be that. It could be a combination of both. Or the fourth thing, which is even more frightening, is this is Joshua Tree is right next to part of the 29 Palms Marine Base, which is one of the biggest marine facilities for the United States on planet Earth. It's a huge training facility, huge base. And maybe we know that this is going on and we're not doing anything about it because we can't. Think about that implication, because you know at 29 Palms they have radar, they have aircraft, they have jets, they have helicopters, they have pilots, and they need to defend this base, right? And they didn't scramble anything. There were no jets coming this way. There were no helicopters. But yet we were watching this. So what does that tell you?
Yes.
I'm completely perplexed. But what it does suggest to me is that I'm right. Things are not what they seem. You know, you see something like that, like you saw up at ESETI, and I see something like this, I'm going to be very vocal about it. There is something going on. I can't explain it, but what I saw is exactly how I just described it to you. It was unbelievable.
Well, I want to share that a Free Zone listener who is a trucker found me while driving around the country and came and told me a story of golfing with the head of Strategic Air Command, and that he was kind of pushing the guy, you know, hey, you know, what's up with the UFOs? Come on. And the guy just got completely straight-faced, you know, so severe, and said, look, they're here. There's nothing we can do about it. Don't bring it up again.
Yeah, and see, I totally, when I hear something like that, not only do I believe it because of what I have seen and what I've witnessed, but we have this whole benevolent question coming up, right? And if ET was here, then how come we're still alive, right? Well, the bottom line is, when I hear that, is maybe they just don't care, right? They're not here to take over the planet. Because if they wanted to do that, they certainly could. And if you're cooking out in your backyard, Freeman, and you've got guests coming over, you're on the East Coast, you've got mosquitoes, right? So what do? You go out, maybe put up a bug lamp, right? Or you maybe spray some insecticide, you know, and you know, some bug spray and care. And you're not concerned about the little mosquito family that's at home waiting for mom and dad to come back, right? That now don't have parents, right? So, you know, you don't. And I know that's a weird analogy, but it's the truth. We're not concerned about when we're walking around our backyard if we're stepping on bugs or things or ending life. And it would be the same thing with ET here. If they wanted to get rid of us, if we were annoying to them, if they wanted Earth to be their new backyard where they could come and party with their buddies, they would spray us, right? They would just get rid of us. And without any concern, because we are beneath them like mosquitoes are to us. And they haven't done that. So maybe they're cool. Maybe they're cool with us. I do know, and I firmly believe with 100% certainty, that they visit us every single day. They know that we're here, you know, and that's where I go with it. The Strategic Air Command, or every government, you know, here on Earth, ET isn't exclusive to the United States. Right? It happens. It's a global thing, and they know this. With the problem, this is where the problem is when we discuss disclosure. The problem is not will there be pandemonium and panic in the streets and the financial markets collapse and religions collapse and it's all over. That's not the problem. The problem is the status quo is going to turn back to our world leaders and our religious leaders and go, how long have you known?
Right.
How long have you been giving us the big lie?
Well, let's consider Governor Fife Symington at the Phoenix Lights events, who managed to get his aide dressed up in a gray costume. Now, how do you get a gray costume on your way to a press conference? I will never know. Maybe I'll get to ask him someday. But then once that he comes out, tells everybody, oh, you're a joke, you know, here's aliens, and it's his assistant in a gray costume, and he laughs at everybody. And then he comes back later and he's all, oh, well, if you had actually been there, you would have seen this was otherworldly. There was no way that this was earthbound technologies. And completely flipped his script. But they That's the way that we are getting disclosure, with, you know, governors coming out in gray costumes laughing at everybody and then flipping the script. Nobody knows what to believe.
Yeah. And Fife actually admitted, he's done it numerous times since, but he actually admitted that he saw it himself with his son. Right. And right. It was a family witness. And he came out and said, you know what? It was big. It was real. My son saw it. I saw it. I cannot tell you what it was, but I apologize. I apologize to everybody for what I went out and did. It was wrong. I lied to everybody. We actually saw this together, and I was one of the witnesses. Yeah, absolutely. It was a fascinating, I like the way you put it, flipped. He right. 100%, he had to flip. He had to. I was in Phoenix when that happened, right? And I didn't see it. I was there, and I had just gotten back from Phoenix on Friday. It happened on Thursday. And I walk in my condo, and I put down my luggage and I pick up the remote control, turn on the TV. I'm turning on the lights and stuff like that. And the news comes on right there. UFO last night in Phoenix, right? And I stop and I'm watching this, knowing I was there the night before. And I'm thinking to myself, how did I miss this? And I was wondering where I was in Phoenix. And I was like, oh, that's right. I was on the patio of the Hard Rock Hotel in the Hard Rock Cafe in Scottsdale, and outside, and I missed it. I was there at the mountain. Obviously we were doing other things and not looking to the sky, but I missed it. And I just couldn't believe how disappointed I was. But the point being this, Fife had to realize that there were thousands and thousands of people in Phoenix that saw this and witnessed this, and he could not call them crazy. And that's what he was up against. Now, the backlash and everything that happened unfolded over the next couple of weeks and forced him to come out and apologize to everybody. But the most stunning part was that he was an actual witness to it himself. So when he stepped up to the microphone, he was lying. He didn't say at that press conference when his aide came out in the ET costume that he had seen it. He did not.
Exactly.
And I think he was very uncomfortable, and he realized that he had to come clean. Also, because his son was involved. You know, I'm right. Sure his son went, dude,
yeah.
We saw this together. Are you telling me I didn't see it? Right? So yeah. There you go. Yeah. A crazy, crazy event.
Yes. How strange. You know, everything I look at around, I think about, you know, we've been looking into space for hundreds of years. We've had telescopes, and no one has ever reported moons on Mars until 1877. Even though we'd had telescopes for 100 years prior, no one ever mentioned moons of Mars. And then 1877, same time Theosophical Society comes around, Luciferianism on the rise, and we get these Phobos and Deimos, you know, fear and panic, and these two moons, and then they become an object of very much everybody's attention, as we send, you know, Russia sent, what, 6 satellites out there, all lost. Every single one of them gets close to Phobos. We sent out Phobos missions, and they get lost, and then all of a sudden we got Buzz Aldrin coming forward saying, well, there's a monolith on Phobos placed there either by God or ET, and we have a mission that goes to Phobos, and now we have tomography and we're able to see inside the moon, and they report all of this live as it's happening, and then they tell us live on the television, we will not be able to get video footage of the monolith on Phobos because we have to go into silent running and shut all electronics, all things down, including the cameras, so that we can get the proper audio clarity to get the tomography back to see inside of Phobos. Oh, and by the way, it's hollow.
Yeah, and this is, I'll tell you what, and this is a good segue into Hollywood, because exactly what 2001 represented, which was a monolith on the moon, right? That entire description and everything out, it makes one believe that Arthur C. Clarke and Kubrick and the NASA and the United States government was all in cahoots for some type of disclosure here, because the odds of the Sentinel, Arthur C. Clarke's original version of this story, that that they knew that there was this object on Phobos, and it was depicted nearly exactly the same as Arthur C. Clarke and Kubrick did in 2001. But backing up the monolith that was on Phobos, the way that it is depicted in the imagery is exactly as was presented in 2001. When we tried to, and let's be very clear here, when we tried to, every attempt at Phobos that was ever made was foiled. Most people don't know this story. Buzz Aldrin, for him to come out very publicly and say, somebody put that there and we need to find out who, right? Is saying something. Does Buzz know something that we don't? I think so. His t-shirts today that he constantly, get your ass back to Mars.
Right. And he established the Freemason Tranquility Lodge on the moon.
Yes, he did. Yes. And he wore, didn't he wear his little, the apron?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can, if you folks want to see this, I do have video of it in Aliens from Hell, just in case you want to see it. And if you want to go see it for yourself, go to the Supreme Council of the Freemasons in Washington, D.C., and you can see all this for yourself.
Now, and going back to the way that Hollywood deals with this stuff, and Arthur C. Clarke in general, Arthur C. Clarke wrote about and spoke about Europa and Jupiter and life on that moon.
Yeah, I was going to say, the Europa, stay away.
Stay away. The universe is yours, but, Europa is ours, right?
And then we discover life.
Right, exactly. And all of this has come to pass. So what is it when we know, you can go to the CIA website, right, CIA.gov, and go to their entertainment section. They have a whole entertainment division, right, a liaison office to connect with Hollywood and other entertainment.
J.J. Abrams being one of the main.
Yes, yes, yes. And so the imagery, I want to say this absolutely correctly, the dogma, right, that is fed to us out of Hollywood when it comes to what E.T. is and what to expect is something that we are every single day there's a script in Hollywood that is getting greenlit about E.T. and alien contact. This weekend, May 19th, the new Alien film.
I was going to say, Alien Covenant, right?
Which is, once again, pointing back to the origins of us in this. Is this part of disclosure? Well, this is what, the answer to that, the short answer is yes. But this is the other part of it. We have a few different generations now in front of us. We have 1950s, 1960s, 70s, 80s, millennials and X and so forth. But one thing is abundantly clear, that my children, I have two daughters, my children and their generation, they're 22 years old, 21, 22 years old. Their generation, E.T. is a second thought.
Right.
It's second thought. They don't question that we are not alone. Right. It is just an accepted fact. And the way that Hollywood has presented this subject to the world now for the younger generations out there, E.T. and flying saucers and alien invasion are accepted norm. This is how it's an accepted fact. And it goes to video games and cartoons and the entire media onslaught on them when it comes to the question about E.T. They don't question it. As we get older through the generations, right, there's the tinfoil hat. You know, as we get older, they were presented as being crazy, nuts. The generations that are running around today in elementary school and junior high and high school, they are not crazy, right? They are told that this is actually what is going on, and it is very effective. Now, is this a CIA plot, right? Is this part of it? I think so. I mean, I went back and looked. Now, this is about 6 months ago, and I just went back and looked at Hollywood releases over the last 10 years. It's every single week. Every single week, there is an alien movie that comes out of Hollywood. Every single week, Freeman. It is an endless. And if somebody says, well, what are you talking about? How about Transformers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you could just go on and on and on and on from movies like, what was Ted?
Arrival. Ted.
Well, Arrival. It's on and on. And so how do you green light a film in Hollywood? You really want your film made? Make it about aliens. Your film's going to get made. They don't have issues with that. And why now this is let's flip it over. Why? Well, first off, Hollywood doesn't like to take chances. They want a return on their investment. How do you get a return on your investment? You make a film about aliens. Why? Because there is an audience that wants to see this. It is not the crazy world anymore, right? They are not the conspiracy theorists. It is where it has become the new normal. When we talk about aliens and alien contact, people want to know about this. It is not a small segment of society now. It has now become the status quo. And it's a numbers thing. You know, you had mentioned in the in my little intro there, about what I do with History Channel and A&E Networks, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. I've got a few shows on History Channel. I've got a new one that's going to be premiering here featuring Fade to Black this September. Very excited about that. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. It's a very cool thing. All dealing with conspiracies. We do some ET. We got some Bigfoot, but we've also got, you know, Big Brother and surveillance and the internet and Anonymous. You know, we're covering a lot of different things. But the reason why I am able to do this new show is because this is what people want to see. And the advertisers recognize that. And it's the networks. And again, they want a return on investment. Which brings me to something like the success of Ancient Aliens. Who could ever explain that away? You know, 10 seasons of Ancient Aliens with no end in sight.
Right.
Why? Because that is what people are wondering about.
Well, we brought up J.J. Abrams, his CIA connection and such. And when he produced the new Star Trek, the planet that they start on is Nibiru.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they're blending what we have been learning and gaining in our understanding of this extraterrestrial ancient past and then tying it right there together. I mean, The Last Aliens, obviously, Prometheus, that one laying out, and then now, you know, Nibiru on Star. But of course, it was different, but, you know, on having the name Nibiru in Star Trek, kind of just laying it out there for those of us in the know, we were the only ones that would notice that.
Right. And when you look at guys like J.J. Abrams or Spielberg or Roland Emmerich, these guys produce the biggest and have the biggest budgets, and their films are seen by the largest audience. But then when you look at the messages behind these guys, I'll give you a perfect, wonderful example. The movie 10,000 B.C., Roland Emmerich, right? 10,000 BC, set as the title suggests, 10,000 BC. Now, we have the questions of Giza and the Great Pyramids and when they were built and who built them and how, right? Now, the accepted from Orthodox academia and Egyptologists and every college and university and school on planet Earth says 2650 BC, 2650 BC, Khufu, It was built for him, and it took 20 years to build. We don't know how they did it, but it happened at 2650 BC. Roland Emmerich comes out with this movie, 10,000 BC, where they are building the pyramids. Think about that. What is really going on here? So you don't have you have the Egyptologists and the Lost Civilization crowd, us and Graham Hancock and so forth, that we think that it's older, but we know that we have this argument going on in our inner circles about the dating of this and who actually built the pyramids. But the 100 million people that saw 10,000 BC know nothing about this argument, know nothing about this infighting that goes on and the books that are published. They don't. But they see the film and they say to themselves, wow, pyramids were built at 10,000 BC. Is that part of the conspiracy? And it goes on and on through Hollywood with all of this information. Steven Spielberg has been classic with it. You know, what does he know? What is the inside track here, and what is his fascination with contact? How many films has he done about this very subject?
Yes.
You know, it seems like every other film that he does is about exactly this, including Indiana Jones.
That's very true. Crystal Skulls.
Yep.
Interdimensional beings, in point of fact.
Yes, and the Ark, and of course, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, but we have The War of the Worlds, you know, and everything that was in between, 8mm. You know, you can look at each one of his films and see that he was definitely E.T., the extraterrestrial, right? A movie made for kids. A movie made for 5-year-old kids about E.T. contact and how to phone home. Right? Embedded in minds for generations. Yeah, you have to wonder what Hollywood is up to with this and what the real message is. It's a fascinating subject for me.
It is, and it's so wonderful to get here and have you on to chat and just get some of the ideas out that we gather from talking to so many people. So tell us now, Jimmy, what's going on? What you got coming up? Lay it out for everyone, how they can find you, how they can listen to Fade to Black, when you're on Coast to Coast, and all that good stuff.
Well, let's start from the top and work down. Fade to Black, just go to jimmychurchradio.com, and we broadcast live every night, Monday through Thursday, live for 3 hours. Everything is free. Just log on to the website. Click, it will play automatically. We are syndicated on a bunch of different networks. So whoever you go to, whether, you know, iHeart Radio, we're there. We're on KGRA. We're on TalkStream Live. I'm trying to think of the other syndicators. So whatever your flavor is on how you want to listen to the show, you just go to the website, you can click and go. So many people are acclimated to where they just normally go for this type of media. So right. we're syndicated on most of those platforms. So
KJCR, KGRA, iHeartRadio, TSL, TuneIn, Spreaker.
On and on.
On and on. All right.
And everything is free. And that's our main thing. Yeah, we have a podcast you can subscribe to, but it's a live radio show. We have a membership area that you can subscribe to, but that is for people that need the media away from the live broadcast. If they can't listen to it live for free, they need to listen to it the next day in their car while they're at work. We have those platforms too, and we just do that as a convenience for everybody. But the main thing is our live show Monday through Thursday. Now, nice. That's from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. live Pacific time. And we do that because we want to broadcast before Coast to Coast. We're off of the air when Coast to Coast starts for a lot of different reasons. But the main reason is, one, I don't want to compete against Coast to Coast, right? That's the first thing. Yeah, you can't compete in a live situation with the behemoth that is Coast to Coast. But also, for those that listen to you and I and want this information, you can get 7 hours of live radio every single night just going from Fade to Black.
Right.
Coast to Coast. And then I'm over at Coast to Coast. Usually it's about scheduling my schedule versus other things, because I'm taping all the time for History Channel too. But I'm usually over at Coast to Coast 2 weekends a month, Friday and Saturday. Whenever George wants to take a Friday off, I fill in for George. I'm the guy that does that. That's an honor, by the way, that he has chosen me to do that. And then I'll do a Friday and a Saturday back to back, and I do that 2 weekends a month. And what that entails, if people want to sit here and do the math, it means that we never take a day off. I work 7 days a week. It never stops. And then on the weekends that I'm not at Coast, I'm taping for History, or I'm at a conference somewhere around the country. So it is it's a 365 day a year gig that I have. I thank the heavens above every day that I am able to do this and make a living and provide for my family and share knowledge, and I could do this every single day. You can follow us on Twitter at JChurchRadio. And as you know, you're a big social media guy, and so are we. And we everything is live and interactive with all of social media at the same time as our broadcast. And that's really me out there on Twitter. I don't have somebody tweeting for me or handling Facebook. I actually interface with the crowd every single day. I love every minute of the fans, social media, and interfacing live and taking phone calls. It's an amazing life.
Yes, so wonderful.
Oh, I got to mention, Contact in the Desert. Now, that's going down. Our schedule is this, and you've got to come out, Freeman. You've got to come out to Contact in the Desert. That's going down this week out in Joshua Tree. And then immediately after that, we're going up to E-SETI, as I just mentioned, with James Gilliland. And you've got to come out and to the West Coast and hang out with us. And we've got to get you on Coast to Coast. But if I get you on Coast, see, this is the thing. You have to behave.
Yeah, I'm not very good at that.
Never behave. So I got to rope you in a little bit, but absolutely, the invitation is there. Whenever you want to do Coast, you just let us know.
Fantastic. I will be as academic as I possibly can, but when Obama's presidential center looks like an ancient Egyptian structure, it's just not going away, Jimmy. Have you seen this? You guys, for you listeners, yeah, the Obama Presidential Center is coming to life in 2021, and it is an ancient Egyptian structure. And, you know, my thoughts on Akhenaten. And anyway, it doesn't go away, Jimmy. I try. I've tried to walk away from that story a number of times, but it's the
one. No, I'm gonna interrupt you right there. Your imagery of that, right, when you presented that, is still burned into my frontal lobes.
Yeah.
Never ever go away.
It's a crazy thing, folks, but that's how strange our planet really is. I mean, when we take into the fact that we're growing lambs in bags, and we have glow-in-the-dark kittens, and you know, UFOs don't seem all that wild anymore, and we're definitely going into a crazy place on planet Earth. And I can't wait to keep talking with Jimmy about that. We're going to get into these familial relations and generational abductees and things that, you know, seem to be touching both Jimmy and I's lives, and much more there on the other side. So if you're not a subscriber yet, get on over to freemantv.com and subscribe today. You won't regret it, man. There's just, you know, hours and hours of backlogs in there for you to dig into. If you're new to the show, get over to freemantv.com and start right at the beginning. Just click the podcast, The Free Zone. Scroll all the way. Keep scrolling. All right. Keep scrolling. All right. Now you're near the bottom. You could start there. There are hundreds of shows for you there to go listen to. So get over to freemantv.com and get over to jimmychurchradio.com, where you can get 7 hours a day of stuff. And I want to recommend all you tinfoil hat wearers that you toss that tinfoil hat away. All right. and replace it with a wire mesh screen that has a grounding wire, okay? Because this is far better than a tinfoil hat and will actually do what you're trying to do there. So just a little note there, wire mesh screen with a ground is far superior than making yourself an antenna with tinfoil. So what a wonderful talk, folks. We're going to bring this on over to the members section and just get wild because we can there. And I love you all. Thank you all so much for tuning in and supporting my efforts. So we will see you all next week.
Peace.